Okay, here we go. It seems like we've whizzed through the last 3 weeks of May with Dr. Rico's program in spite of what's going on around us. From the comments we received, Triggers has been a worthwhile, practical, and timely study. We've gotten used to the virtual platform, especially liking those breakout rooms. People tell me they love those breakout rooms. And folks have commented that they really feel more focused with this kind of a presentation rather than over at the church. And they feel intimately connected with Dave and his presentation. And then we've been asked about Dr. Tim Burnett. The comments have included respectful. Isn't he kind? He's so patient. He's so knowledgeable. But who is he? Tim is much more than a Zoom master. He holds a Master of Divinity in Theology from Claremont College, and he's the founder, the core curator, and I think our word is a pastor, of the Way Collective, located at 1915 Chapala Street. The Way Collective is a community of shared practices and values rooted in the Jesus Wisdom tradition. Check out his website. I've sent it to you. And I want you to know that Tim is bridging the gap between the wisdom generation and the millennial generation. Thanks to Tim, our presentations are zooming along. So Dave, we've gotten so many positive comments about it, about your presentation. So we're going to turn it over to you now, and you're going to start, I think, with chapter 7 and going to the end of the book. And maybe at the end of this, you'll be able to tell us what you're going to do for us in May of 2021. All right. Take it away, Dave.
Thank you, Judith, and thank you, Tim, and welcome, everyone. Well, I feel a little bit sad that this is our last meeting because I really enjoyed the get-togethers, such as they are. And I guess we'll just do the best we can. Obviously, triggers will figure in to all relationships. So I want to begin by saying it's perfectly normal to be triggered by people that you are relating to. So this includes a partner, if you have one, family members, your own children, your own parents, your brothers and sisters, the people that you work with. It wouldn't really be a relationship with depth if people didn't have the power to touch you in a way that is triggering. So we want to be touched in the positive ways, which I call the 5 A's. We want to be touched by noticing that people pay attention to us, accept us as we are, appreciate us, that is, value us, show affection to us in appropriate ways, and at the same time, allow us to make the decisions that fit with our basic needs and wishes, rather than try to control us. And they support us in our freedom. So those would be the positive triggers that we all are looking for. But at the same time, we have the other kind of triggers that we've been discussing, the ones that bring up sadness, anger, fear, shame, a sense of being unworthy, a sense of not being respected, and a relationship means I have decided to give some of my power over my own feelings and moods to this person that matters to me. Or another way of saying it is, that's one of the ways that people matter. They have it in them to push your buttons in some way. So I'd like to begin with just reading the one paragraph at the beginning of our chapter. It is chapter 7, and I'm on page 127. So if you have the book, you can follow along. Partners naturally trigger one another, and that would also, it's not only partners, it's family members too, and workmates and friends. This follows from the past that our choice of a partner has so much to do with our past. We might have chosen a partner who reminds us of the parent with whom we have unfinished business. We are often triggered by something that someone says or does because it has resurrected a pattern that we recall from early life or recent relationships that still has unfinished business in it. And we find out what the real issue is, the need to go to our own work on ourselves and clear up what's left over from the past. And when we do this work, we still speak up about what triggers us in our relationships. What changes is that we do it in a more matter-of-fact way. I'll give an example. We are reporting an impact, not heaping blame and pouring out vitriol. We're not triggering the other person that we're relating to, but communicating. This is how triggering can turn into a more loving experience. So I use the example in the book of you're making something and you asked your partner to bring home some coriander. And you say, did you remember to bring the coriander? And he or she says, no, I forgot. So instead of being triggered into the kind of anger that blames, oh, once again, what I want doesn't matter. Of course you forgot, like you always forget the things that matter to me, but you don't forget what matters to you. If you're going to give that kind of an answer, you're going to have big problems. And there's nothing worse than starting an argument based on blame, and then having the other person become defensive and then blame you in some way. Whereas if instead of being triggered, you use this matter-of-fact approach, oh, you forgot. Okay. Well, I'll just do without, or I'll run out and get some now. See, that's responding rather than reacting. And the worst part about triggers in any relationship is that you trigger each other and you keep going back and forth and it doesn't really get you anywhere. So we're going to be looking for ways, and the chapter helps you find those ways, to disregard the automatic triggering reaction and to refocus toward what's really going on. So let's use another example. Let's say you noticed that when you say things, your partner or your friend or whoever the family member is or at work shows that it doesn't really matter, that they're not really taking you seriously, they're not really listening to you. And that's when you would use your kind of assertive response. And you would say, I'm having the feeling that I'm not really being heard here. And is there a way that I can put this so that it really comes across? That's different from, well, once again, you're not listening to me, which puts the other person on the defensive. So as you care more and more about communication, rather than how your ego has been wounded, you're more likely to go to this more matter-of-fact style of responding. Now let's use a particular example that I think is really important, and that is when someone hurts your feelings, or when someone even strongly dislikes you, even hates you, somebody does something that's mean. And now I'm on page 135, and I'm going to use the example of being snubbed. Someone that you relate to is snubs you. So if someone snubs us, we can snub him back the next time we see him. This is the primitive style of retaliation. Do as you've been done by. So that's one way to handle the trigger. You were snubbed. You felt hurt. Your feelings were hurt. This has the felt sense of a rejection. Seems unfair because you've always been nice to this person, but this person has now snubbed you. And so you have three choices. The first choice is the one that you automatically go to from our cave people times, still lodged way in the back of our brain. Hurt back. Second possibility, number two, we do not snub him back, since we've chosen a lifestyle of following the golden rule. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you, not as they have done to you. So, one, snub him back. Two, don't snub him back. But that doesn't go far enough, because now we're going to the third option, which is the more spiritual one. In spiritual awareness, we are moved to choose an over-the-top response. We decide to do good to anyone who has hurt us. Obviously, I'm quoting the Sermon on the Mount, do good to those who have hurt you. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who have mistreated you. Quoting Jesus. We actually do good to the one who has snubbed us, either directly or in our loving kindness, aspirations, or prayers. Then I give my outline on page 136 and 137. You see the chart there. We don't have to go through the whole thing, but I do want to mention a couple of the listings. So, the reptilian brain, which is the most primitive part of our brain, says hate or hurt back. Imagine being in a relationship with somebody, like imagine being in a marriage in which your partner follows this perspective. And every time you in any way hurt him or her, you can bank on the fact that he's out to get you. And he's going to be vindictive and retaliate. This doesn't sound like love, does it? Option number two. We don't hurt or hate back. Option number three. Not only do we not hate or hurt back, we go one step further. We do good to those who have hurt us. This may simply mean having no ill will toward that person for what he or she has done. that would be an example of doing good. As the Dalai Lama says, if you can't do something specific that is good or heroic, at least do no harm. So no ill will. While wishing them the best, even if it will mean less or no contact. And in all this, we hold the intention to forgive. So option one is right the wrong. Option two is follow ethical principles. Option three is act in accord with the teachings of Buddha, Christ, Saint Francis, all the people, Martin Luther King, all the people who came along in the course of history to show us the third option. And it's completely counterintuitive. Why would I want to do good to those who have hurt me? There's absolutely no motivation that you can find within your own head. Motivation is, this is what I want to do as someone who has civilized himself spiritually. That's what you're doing. You're civilizing yourself spiritually. Of course, that primitive reaction brings up the adrenaline, the testosterone-driven ego-saving reaction. The second one brings up the oxytocin, which is the heart-motivated sense of respect and holding others in your embrace. And the unconditional loving response, which is the third one. So the first is the primitive reptilian brain. Second is commitment to do no harm. Third is expressing loving kindness. That too is the oxytocin and the heart expanding one. So you would want to ask yourself which of the three you would like to practice. And what I've noticed is that when I go to the third option, which is not only don't harm others, but do good to those who have somehow hurt you, I've noticed that I like myself more. And also it feels like I'm finally living out what I talk about, and I feel like I'm responding to the call from Buddha, from Christ, that says, love one another. So that is a really powerful example of the different ways to deal with the trigger. And we use the simple one, which is, you know, being snubbed. And we notice that we have three possibilities within us, maybe many more, but these are the three that I thought of. And that third one, that one that's not the one you ordinarily choose, is what brings you to a mature spirituality, which is the other part of our topic for today. So I'm linking the two topics, so triggers and relationships and spirituality. So let me just check in with everybody for questions. Tim, do you see any questions there for us?
I don't see any yet in the chat, but people are welcome to type one now or to raise a hand by clicking on the participants button.
Okay, no problem. I want to say one more thing while we're waiting. And this is something I've certainly noticed in my own life, and I'm sure you have. It's hard in a relationship to express a need, and love is shown by openness to the needs and feelings of others, and of course hoping that they will be open to your needs and feelings. And now I'm on page 149. Just wanted to read this little paragraph. It's so hard to express a need without having it come across as a judgment. For instance, and it took me a while to realize this, but I found it very important. For instance, I need more affection. Let's say you say to a partner, I need more affection. Or you say to a friend, I need more respect. Or you say something like, I need more acceptance of myself as I am. All of those statements seem to equal, you're not giving this to me enough. So when I say, I'd like to have you show me more, show that you have more confidence in me, it sounds like you're also saying, you haven't shown me that so far. So the partner then reacts when you say, I need this. Partner reacts by going on the defensive, feeling attacked, judged as inadequate. So this would be the more appropriate way to express it. We can more appropriately express our emotional needs this way. So remember, the first way was, I need more attention. And the message underneath is, you're not giving me enough. There's something wrong with you. So here's a new way of expressing it. Let's use the example of affection. You are good at giving affection, and it makes me want more. How about doing it together now? So that statement does not trigger. Let's show each other affection now. Show that you have an emotional connection to me. It does not have to be sexual. But you begin by acknowledging you have a lot of affection in you. I'd love to see some of it right now, and I'd like to show it toward you. Or you have it in you to be very attentive to my needs and feelings. Let's see if we can pull that together right now and give it to each other. And then I use that example of the coriander. We can learn to express any need without accusing the other of inadequacy. That's the point I'm bringing up. For instance, we can say, I need the coriander for this dish, and our partner hands it to us, a clear transaction. But when we say, I needed coriander and I asked you to get it on your way home, and you just don't listen to me, that's judgment. So I'm pulling that together with what I brought up before. It's learning not to trigger your partner or friend by saying things that give the impression of inadequacy, even if you realize that he is indeed inadequate. It's not going to do much good to trigger somebody into defensiveness and shame. And it fits with, you know, the idea of being snubbed, because you've learned how not to be triggered into primitive revenge, and you're also learning how not to trigger the other into shame. So I think this is an important feature of this particular chapter. Okay, do we have questions about this part?
We do have a couple, yeah. The first one from Kate says, can you please talk about how to use response number 3 when you are dealing with someone who is relating from response number 1?
Well, that's a really good question. So somebody is coming across to you in this primitive retaliatory way. And you are saying, but I'm not going there. I'm not going to be imitating what you're doing. I'm coming up with my own response. And my response is loving kindness rather than retaliation. It's showing that you come from a whole different place. I remember a little moment in that movie from long ago, The Nun's Story, where a native, Audrey Hepburn is in Africa as a missionary, and somebody has done something harmful, and one of the natives says to Audrey Hepburn, well, we have to get back at him for this. And she says, no, we were taught to forgive. So it's like you come across showing that you have a different mindset from the one that the other person has. And you're not tooting your own horn about it. You're just doing something in accord with a newly formed conscience that comes from this unconditional loving response rather than from vengeance. Gradually, as this comes together, you can no longer believe there's such a place as hell, because that would mean that you have a God who operates from the most primitive level that humans ever thought of, namely, punish people for what they have done. You would now get it. There can't be such a place if the name of our God is love. And when St. John says God is love, that's the end of believing that there's such a thing as eternal punishment. This is my own opinion, but I'm sharing it. Because how could it be that the highest being would be at the lowest level, that even humans have learned to transcend? That would be a God who never heard the Sermon on the Mount or met Martin Luther King. Anyway, let's not get off on that topic. But Gordon had a question.
Yeah, and there's also another one in the chat, but let's go ahead.
Gordon next. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yes, I was wondering how you deal with a person in your family or whatever who is under the influence of alcohol or drugs or something. Can you just not walk away or something, or what is the best way to handle that situation?
But you can't reason with somebody who is under the influence, so you just have to make sure they're safe and make sure you're safe, and not to try to explain anything to them, try to get a point across, because it doesn't really go anywhere. Okay. And of course, when you have someone like that in the family or a partner, that would be where the Al-Anon program fits in. It's a 12-step program to learn how to turn everything over to a power beyond ourselves, since everything we try doesn't really work. You said you had another question, Tim?
Yeah, we've got a couple here now in the chat. The first one, what about when the snub or hurt is perceived by you and is your trigger issue? So meaning maybe that person didn't mean to snub you, but maybe the perceived snub is just your own trigger. How do you tell between what's going on there?
Well, to go back to the beginning of our little class here, I am working on my triggers by taking each of them as a trailhead into the recesses of my own experience, and I'm asking myself, how is this trigger somehow reflecting my shadow, my ego, or my early life? And how do I work on that, on any of those three or all three, rather than be so sharply triggered? Remember that we'll never get rid of triggers altogether. That wouldn't be a human way of being. Humans are triggered, just goes with territory, no problem. What we're trying to do is mute the loud noise that the trigger makes in our psyche and body. We're trying to dull the thud of how that trigger landed on us so that it no longer activates that ego response or that vengeful response. We're trying to say, if I'm this triggered by something and it's happening all over the place, that shows me where my work is. That shows me what I have to look at in myself that's still unfinished, that still needs a little more sanding because it's way too rough. And when you go there, you're taking responsibility for your trigger rather than blaming it on someone else. The one who snubbed you is not to blame. The one who snubbed you is simply doing what he or she is doing. And you just take it in this, you take it as a fact rather than as something that has to strongly upset. Normal to be upset to some extent, but then you're going to go to how have I been snubbed in the past that I still haven't even worked out? Secondly, part of being human is being sometimes accepted and sometimes rejected. And I would say that the most important practice I've ever done in my entire life, either from Christianity or from Buddhism, barring not, the thing that helped me the most and still helps me every single day is the unconditional yes to the givens of life. One of these givens is, people will snub me. Another given is, people will embrace me. It has to be totally okay that both of those happen. Obviously, one doesn't feel very good. The other one does. That can't matter. What matters the most is, how am I triggered? And how have I gently moved the trigger in a new direction? So instead of having the trigger move me directly into revenge, I now have done whatever spiritual practices help me move it into the unconditional loving response, which does not have to mean that I'm palsy-walsy. It could just mean no ill will, turn it over to a higher power, and move on. Even that would be a sign of unconditional love. It's anything other than get back at him or her for what, for daring to hurt someone as important as me. That's where there, the ego comes in.
There's one more.
Okay.
Okay. Sometimes the other person sees your equanimity and calm, your own nonviolent approach, as cold and uncaring or as manipulative. So how do you work with somebody who perceives it in that way?
I wouldn't work at it at all. I would just allow that person to misunderstand. That would be another example of a given. Sometimes even the most wonderful motivation in me will be misinterpreted and thought of as manipulative, theatrical, whatever. And I just need to let them believe what they're going to believe, because I've got bigger fish to fry. What are these bigger fish? I want everything that I do and everything that I feel to show the love that's in me. And that may not come across to others as love. It may be interpreted in some other way, but it's not going to be up to me to make sure everybody gets it right. It's not going to be up to me to make sure that everybody gets it, that I'm the good guy. One of the givens is going to be, no matter what, some people might interpret it in the opposite way of the way it was meant. And when you act this way, when you get to this point, you're just going to feel so liberated, because you're no longer having to explain yourself to everybody. And you're also not holding it against them. Well, I guess some people get it and some people don't. I noticed that in the poetry class. Some people get the poem, some people don't. What am I going to do? Think to myself, spend another hour trying to make sure everybody gets it deeper way, let's say, that some people are getting it. I mean, some people get it better than I get. We just have to accept that, well, some people get it at this level and other people get it at a different level, and that's perfectly okay. All that matters is we're all here together and we're trying to understand. And this, of course, is the opposite of, you know, the way we were brought up. So there really is a challenge to have this new way of looking at things. But I'm also open to any comments about this, because maybe I got the whole thing wrong. Alice? Are you unmuted, Alice?
He's unmuted on my end. Just need to unmute yourself, Alice.
Okay, one of the triggers for me, and this is just a perspective on the word and need, expressing my need. So just because I've dealt with this in relationships, I finally came to ask myself why I need a person to be something other than they are for me. Why can't I just let that person, you know, where is my neediness coming from? What in me is good and still has a need? So I think of it more in relationships as maybe a desire for the relationship to be different, rather than this feeling of a neediness inside myself. I don't feel like I need somebody to be different than who they are. And if I do want to evoke something like that, I would do it by appreciation of that person. If the quality that I'm looking for emerges in a situation, I would say, I so appreciate that you said that to me, or that you noticed that it would be helpful to me. That's what helps me be in a closer relationship, you know, with you. Something like that, where I show appreciation rather than a neediness. And by showing the appreciation, trying to get across the fact that this is something that I value in my relationship with you. But there's something about a neediness inside myself that I'm always questioning. Why do I need this person to be this way with me? What in me isn't complete, or something like that?
Well, thank you, Alice. That's a really good comment. And I just wanted to, I can respond somewhat by saying what we miss out on either in childhood or in former relationships, needs that were never really fulfilled. They become like a bottomless pit, and we just can't get enough. So that's one option. The other is the difference between need and neediness. A need is a requirement, whereas neediness is a compulsion. It's a must-have energy. And when you come across with that must-have energy, you defeat your own purpose, because it triggers the other person into pulling away from you rather than getting closer. So when you express the need in a healthy way, such as, I've done a lot this week to get things set up for our daughter's birthday, and I really like some appreciation for the work I put into it. You're saying this to your spouse, let's say. That's expressing the need in a healthy way. It doesn't trigger something. It evokes, hopefully, it evokes some appreciation and response. So when you ask yourself the question, why am I needy? It's the trailhead into how was this need not fulfilled originally? Or when you ask yourself, why do I have this need at all? That's because you're a human being and we have needs and feelings. And we bring these needs and feelings to others because we're social beings. So there's nothing wrong with it at all. And all that matters is that we realize who can fulfill this need and who can't. And let it be okay that some people just can't come across in a way that's fulfilling. And you just no longer keep trying to force them to fulfill something that they've shown they're not ready or capable of doing. Secondly, always ask yourself, how can I fulfill this need for myself? How can I appreciate myself for what I'm doing rather than have to get it from somebody else? See, the have to, that's the compulsion that triggers the other to pull away. You're reminding me of something, a study that was done that I found very fascinating. This was a study done regarding the healings at Lourdes, a shrine of the Virgin Mary, where over the centuries people have found healing for their physical or spiritual needs. And they did interviews of people who were definitely healed, according to the medical inquiry into what happened, and the people who did not get a healing. So they interviewed both people with the same questions. And one of the questions was, what kind of prayers did you say when you came here to Lourdes and you spoke to Our Lady? What kind of prayers did you say? They asked this question of the ones who did receive a healing and the ones who didn't. The ones who did receive a healing prayed like this: Mary, I ask for a healing, but if it's not meant to be, help me accept whatever the results will be. The ones who did not get a healing prayed like this: Oh Mary, heal me, heal me. I need to be healed. Heal me, heal me. That approach of demanding, forcing, didn't go anywhere. What worked was, this is what I want, this is my need, and I'm open to whatever the response will be. Another way of saying, thy will be done, I guess. I've always found that study very fascinating because it also not only applies spiritually, it also applies to relationships. Here's what I want. I hope you can give it to me. And if you can't, I find it in myself and others. And it's going to be hard to say that if you have gotten no all your life from others. So you know, we want to be that self-compassion also. Were there any other questions? Catherine, are you asking a question?
I see John has a hand up over here.
Oh, hi, John.
Hi. I just want to respond to the question about what to do when somebody triggers me. What I'm working on doing is getting into gratitude for that person because it gives me another opportunity to look at what's going on with me and to work on that. So I'm taking a class in which I chose the teacher because she triggered me left, right, and center. She had all the things that my mother did to me that I didn't like, and she was doing it in spades. And so I kept on going to this class, and now I think I've got to the stage that I can leave it because she's no longer triggering me. And I can go on to somebody else to find somebody else to trigger me and then do that. And what this means is that I'm gradually removing all those little things inside me that make me not accept people. And by getting into gratitude's a much nicer place than hate and anger at other people. So I much prefer to get into gratitude. So what do you think of that idea?
I love it. Thank you for telling us. And good luck in finding more people to trigger you so you can have even more gratitude. That would be a very healthy way to do this whole thing. Everyone is giving us a reason to be thankful.
Yeah, you know, Dave, the other image that came for me when you were talking about extending loving kindness to others as our response was the parable of the sower, you know, that Jesus teaches on. I think it's a pretty familiar image probably to many, but just the idea that if what you're sowing is your response of loving kindness, you have to realize that sometimes it will fall on fertile soil, but sometimes it will fall on rocky paths or in weeds that will choke it up. And, you know, I love that it's one of the only parables where Jesus kind of explains what he means when he says it and says, hey, you're going to be showing loving kindness to people who don't have ears to hear it or don't have eyes to see it. And I think that's just a re-articulation of the given that you were mentioning, that you can't control another. It always reminds me of that Merton quote about love, you know, beginning of love is to love someone just as they are. Otherwise, we only love the image of ourselves that we see in them, and we're always looking for people to mirror ourselves. But if we can just let them be who they are, even if they're stubborn or weedy or, you know what I mean, rocky. You know, so for me, that was the image that came to mind when you started to talk about how to show loving kindness.
Yeah, thank you. And the opposite of that, you know, we sow, S-O-W, we sow love, and sometimes it's received and sometimes it isn't. And then the opposite of that is a quote from the Hebrew Bible, sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. When you put out negative energy, what comes back is even more negative energy. Hopefully something has shifted inside the primitive cave people heritage that all of us carry around, so that we no longer go to the places that bring about hurt, blame, and pain, and instead we're showing a whole new style of living that is what I was describing as the loving kindness response. Any other final questions about, we just have a few minutes left before we're doing our breakout rooms, but does anybody have any final questions about?
Yeah, Jody's got her hand up.
Yeah. Hi, Jody.
Hi. Great topic today. My question is what if you're around somebody that, I don't really know how to explain this, but they kind of have, I've noticed, like their own lens of how they see you. Mm-hmm. And part of it could be true, but the question is, if they keep saying they can't get something from you, or they want you to be more, they want you to give more, or it's kind of a repetition, like, oh, you always, you know, I'm always discouraged by you, or you always disappoint me. And my question is, what is my call to do at that point? Like, is that my place to say, wow, am I really not meeting this person's need? Or is it my place to say, you know, it's kind of like I'm feeling like, what do you do when, you know, not that somebody's always angry, but it's always coming across about what you're not doing or what you're not giving. And I've been trying to figure out, like, well, what do I do with that instance?
I guess, so your question is basically, no matter what you do, the other person feels disappointed, like you're not giving or doing enough. Is that the idea?
That's part of it. And they'll make the statements like you said, oh, you just don't hear me. Oh, there you go, doing what you want again. It's a lot of, it could show up like a lot of that, which is not very positive or spiritual or supportive, pretty blaming. And some of it could be true in myself, and some of it could be like, maybe I really don't care, or maybe it's sort of like, how do you deal with people that kind of in a relationship that kind of keep at you with some of the same stuff? And I've been wondering about, like, is that their lens? Is that how they see the world? Is that how they, you know what I'm saying? Or is it more of what's true? I don't know if that makes sense, but yes, it's what you're saying.
It sounds like you also feel blamed by.
Yeah.
You're saying?
It can feel that way, yes. And then I usually want to say, okay, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, one thing that really helps is to say directly, you know, I feel blamed when you come across this way and puts me on the defensive. And I think we'll have much better communication if you can have a way of telling me what you need. And if I can tell you what part of the need I can fulfill and what part I can't. And yes, I will be disappointing in some moments of our time together. And at other times, I will be fulfilling. And I'm not fully in control of that. But I certainly want to do my best. But in order for me to do my best, we have to have the kind of communication that does not include blame. So let's see if we can, you know, find a way to get past that.
And I think a big thing that I have trouble with, and you brought it up today, was that when people tell you what you're doing, like, you know, they'll say, well, you're this or you're that, or you didn't bring that because you don't care. I do feel blamed, and I think, or shamed, like you said. And I really don't know how to respond. I often say, because I don't really know what to say, like, do you want to tell me what I'm doing? Or do you want to ask me what I'm doing? So how do you deal with that without...
I get what you're saying, and it's in that same category of a breakdown in the communication. And when you're coming from this place of wanting to communicate, then you have to do two things. One is open to what the person is actually needing and feeling, and secondly, having the good boundaries not to let someone blame you and put you down. But we need to take our break, so
mm-hmm.
Let's go to that, and then we will come back pick it up again. Tim?
Yeah. All right, friends. We are going to take 20 minutes to be in breakout groups together. And then after that 20-minute period, I will send your group a message saying that you have a 5-minute bio break. And the reminder that I like to give each week is please don't close your laptop computer. Please don't log out of Zoom on your tablet device or your phone, or please don't log out on your desktop computer, because it's just much easier for you all to be invited back to the main room after that 5-minute break if you leave it on. So yeah, Dave, are there any questions you want them to talk about during this first 20-minute conversation?
I'd like to, the topic that I would like people to look at is how I notice I trigger others in relationships and how they trigger me, either one or both of those. How they trigger, how I trigger others and how they trigger me.